speaking.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Cool. All right. There's 15 people, 16 people in the room right now, and there's still a couple more people on their way. Anyway, I hope I've got everything set up right. The Pamela is, like you said, a breeze to use.
And good.
So I do have it going so that I've got one person I know can't be here today, and she'll be able to listen to it later.
And I heard the little message that's built into Pamela that said this call is being recorded. So yeah. It seems to be working.
Yeah. And I have your presentation downloaded, ready to go. If you tell me when you want it and when you want me to switch slides, I'm ready on this end.
Cool. Okay. And so we have about how many students there?
Pardon me?
How many students we have assembled?
14 at the moment.
Okay. And the focus is elementary ed.
Uh-huh.
And how are they doing today?
Good.
Okay, I take your word for it. I'm here in New Jersey, greater New York City, where we just hit the tail end of a heat wave. So I'm very happy not to have roaring air conditioners in my ears. And I don't know if you guys are still in a heat wave or not.
Fortunately not.
Good. I like to do presentations that are interactive. So I have a series of slides to go through. But if there are questions along the way, I want you to go ahead and speak up to me. I can't see you, so I can't see you waving your hands at me. So you've just got to speak up. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Because I don't want to drone on just be a talking PowerPoint at you. But I'm Dr. Kathy King, and so we can put up the first slide there if we could, Marcia.
It's up.
And I'm Dr. Kathy King. I'm a professor at Fordham University, and I'm a specialist in distance ed, instructional technology, and also adult learning. And I look at working with teachers as working with adult learners, focusing on their needs as learners. This broadcast is being done from my home office in New Jersey, so you might occasionally hear two little creatures in the background that are very furry. I have two little Bichon dogs, so if they act up, you'll know I'm not being attacked by wild animals over here, okay? Just thought I'd warn you so you wouldn't freak out. Your professor, I think, tracked us down through our podcast,
mm-hmm.
And this is a very exciting endeavor. Because my work from the university, where I've been at Fordham particularly for 10 years, I've done a great deal of publication and presenting at conferences. But through podcasting the last 2 years, we've reached over 3 million people around the globe. And I'll tell you, I speak at a lot of conferences, but I could have never done that. So this is a pretty wonderful technology to be able to reach out to a lot of people and for them to be able to listen to what we have to say and interact with us whenever they're free to be able to do that. Now, you folks have been listening to some podcasts?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so you've got the idea of how they're used. You can click on them. You can listen to them on your computer, or you can take them with you, right?
Right.
Okay. All right, so you're way ahead of a lot of people. You know that. You're way ahead of a lot of people. Okay. Next slide there. As we're going to be talking today about planning and implementing for effective use of technology in education. And this is a really important aspect that it's not going to be real boring because it's really practical and it brings, I think, together a lot of things that you do as classroom educators. I've written a couple of books on this topic And whenever I teach my courses on ed tech, and I work with teachers who are teaching preschool all the way through elementary, middle school, high school, and teachers of higher ed and teachers of GED students, all the way through these principles apply. And I've worked with them through all those different age groups. So I'm going to share with you some of the principles that fit across that whole range. And then we're going to talk about some real practical things for elementary ed. Okay? All that in about 5 minutes. No, I'm kidding. But in preparing to use technology in classrooms, here's just some bullet points of the where we're going to be headed in the next 30 minutes or so, okay? We're going to be talking about preparation, planning, talking about evaluating hardware and software, thinking about that when we look at integrating technology that we want to have a strategy in mind. We're also going to be looking at how do educators go through stages of adoption. And then we're going to be looking at aligning resources and some other critical points. So that little image that you have there, that clip art piece under construction, is the idea that as we look at integrating technology into our classrooms, it's a process. And it's not just how do we fit this into our lesson plan, but it's something that has a continuity to it and has several pieces to it. And it's something that you're thinking about on an ongoing basis, and all your different classes tie together in different ways. So as we move to the next slide, one of the things is we start at the very beginning when we think about integrating technology. You don't want to start with all the glitz factor of, oh, wow, I want to use the iPhone. I want to use the latest and greatest webcam. I want to use the, you know, the greatest recorder. Don't want to start with the equipment. You want to think about your outcomes. You know, what are the educational outcomes? And sometimes people only think of that first one as a concrete one. Well, it's going to help my students to get more motivated. And that can be really important. I don't know how it is out there, but in New York City public schools, it's a real challenge to get students motivated and involved in educational process, regardless of age. So motivation is not something to just brush away. It is very important. But these other aspects are also very important outcomes that when you can show these as outcomes to your administrators, to your school leaders, they stand up and take notice, because these are important outcomes that they're responsible for. So we're not just talking about technology for the sake of using the latest and greatest gadgets. We're talking about improving instructional learning. We're talking about greater teacher productivity. And we're talking about using new instructional approaches. Some of this sound familiar to you folks?
Yep.
Yes.
How about questions? Any questions on any of those? What do you think when you think about the possible outcomes from using technology with your students or your prospective students? What do you think are some of the possibilities of outcomes that would be worth your while? Why bother using technology?
Involvement. Student involvement.
Involvement, okay.
Reaching other students who normally wouldn't participate.
Good.
Differentiation.
Good. Very good. Yep. There's a funny word out there. You see it down in the third bullet point. Down at the end, it says HOTS.
I was just going to ask that. I don't know what it is.
You guys know what HOTS is? That goes back to when I was studying for my doctoral comps. My group of colleagues came up with that. That was our abbreviation. You have to have the HOTS in teaching. Okay, it sounds a little weird. Yeah. It's the higher order thinking skills. Where does that come from? Whose taxonomy?
Blue.
There you go. Yeah, you know that guy. Okay. That's the HOTS. You have to have the HOTS. Okay? So technology can really facilitate incorporating critical thinking skills, analysis, synthesis, all those things that we know are so very important and that even standardized tests are working towards us measuring. So it's no longer what we used to call drill and kill with technology. I don't know if you ever heard that phrase. Mm. Where we used to have basically computerized flashcards at one time. When you're thinking about your technology integration, you also want to think about planning. And this happens up front. Even as an individual classroom teacher, if you want to do something that's going to endure, you've got to look at, especially if you need a new curriculum or new resources, new books, new software, anything like that that your school has to do any sort of purchase or you need to get any sort of permissions at all, you've got to figure out how what you're doing fits in with the organizational mission and philosophy. You can't just be the silo out there, this independent agent running around, because that's not going to fit in with your school system, right? You've got to think of yourself as part of the school mission and philosophy and be able to explain to your school leader, to your department head, to your unit leader, how what you're doing meshes with this and is going to help advance them in their ultimate goals. So remembering that piece is very important, and something that I think a lot of classroom teachers, if they're not writing a grant proposal, really skip by this. It really comes to your advantage, though, because if you think about what you're doing and you think about it this way, you're going to get a lot further in what you need when you talk to your school leader. If they can see that you want to purchase XYZ software for your classroom, and that it's going to fit in with the goal of the school to be more involved in the community, or the goal in the school to raise the language arts scores, then they're going to say, okay, this fits in with the outcomes or the goals that we have as an organization. This is going to fit in with the plans that we have and the objectives I need to meet this school year. It's going to fit right in, and they can approve it more easily. If it's just some peripheral activity, then they're not going to be able to buy into it more as easily for you. I'm not sure if many classroom teachers are familiar with thinking of themselves as part of a larger organization this way. It can really help you to get the things that you need and be able to what your students learn and do with you. They'll have more likely those activities and that perspective continue on beyond just your individual classroom. So you're not fighting against the grain. You're not fighting against the current. But instead, you can try to build some sort of impact. So these are really important aspects. Also, whenever you're planning to do an activity, whether it's an individual unit or something you're going to be doing over a course of a year, you might have been talking about action research in some of your classes. When you set out to lay down a plan, you always want to think about, how do I know if I did it well? So that's the evaluation piece. And you want to think about that. Not just evaluating your student, but also evaluating your project. So now moving on to the slide about software and hardware evaluation.
We're there.
Great. How do you know if you have software that works well with your students? That's an open question for you guys.
Interaction.
What's that?
Interaction.
Good, yes. Yeah.
They want to do it.
Yeah. They have incentive, right?
I guess could you assess them on the project you're doing?
Good. Yeah, assessments built into it. Some other aspects, those are all very good ones. Some other aspects are listed here. You want to have software that's going to jive with your curriculum, right? Not something that's going to tear them off in a direction that's going to be even counterproductive. Maybe it's going to add some things so that it's going to take you in additional acceleration, but at least it's going to be consistent. You want quality products, and you've mentioned some different characteristics of qualities. You also, there's a lot of different resources and databases now in 2007 that we didn't even have 10 years ago. But on the web, you can find a lot of places where you can look up product reviews, not done by commercial vendors, but done by educators. So you can see what other classroom educators say about the products and software that you're thinking about purchasing. This is invaluable. Then you also want to look at, can you purchase one copy to go on the network? Do you have to purchase all individual copies? Do they sell them in packets of 5 or packets of 25, or do you have to buy all single units? And then where is the best source to get the best price? A surprising fact is also that sometimes you need to ask your instructional technology person or the person in charge of purchasing for your school or district, because it might be that you just happen to be looking at a product that your school or district already has a site license for, and you didn't even know it. That would be just like a holiday come home, wouldn't it? But I see that happen in the university all the time, that we think we have to go purchase something, even in fact we go and purchase it, and then find out 3 months later, oh no, there was a site license. Very frustrating. So a lot of times there aren't systems to be able to check that unless you go around and do the inquiry and beat the bushes. So always check that out. There's a number of really good sources online for getting good prices. Most products have educational discounts. Journey Marketing, I've found for years, is a good source. Journey Marketing is one place. A lot of the people that make the software have their own educational discounts right there. You can just do a search on the web. Make sure whoever you buy it from has a good free return policy. And your schools probably have vendors that they deal with on a regular basis and purchasing processes. A lot of these software companies also, like I was just down at the ISTE NEC conference, International Society of Technology and Education, down in Atlanta this year. And when you go to those conferences, you get to visit all these different vendors. A lot of these vendors give out free CDs with samples of software on it. So you get one CD and it has a bunch of different ones on it. So that can be a good thing for teachers to try out. Hardware, you want to think about a couple of things, especially what platform operating system you're going to be thinking about using, PC, Macs, or if you're going to be going towards open source like Linux. How many computers, if you're going to be working with standalones, or if you're going to be working with a network system, or even what we used to call dumb terminals, but which are coming back in favor now. Especially on open source configurations.
Yeah, they anybody? Have a name for it now. Instead of dumb terminals, they call it thin clients.
Yes, isn't that rather hysterical? especially when you consider in our society that thin is a very flattering word.
That's right.
So thin clients, yes, absolutely. And the students understand what that is? A thin client network?
No, they don't.
That's situation like sometimes at a library you walk in, and when you go into look up books in the catalog, you might not be on an entire computer system. You might just have a keyboard and a monitor, and that's all wired into a network. That's a thin client. Or it might just be a very, very slim box that really doesn't have the entirety of a whole desktop computer sitting there. And instead, there's a server that everything's plugged into. And so you can set up a classroom of maybe 20, 25 computers that's really only running off one server, and you only have one desktop in that room, desktop or tower computer, and all the other, quote, computers are just monitors and keyboards wired over to that unit. They might just have a little box where somebody can plug in a USB plug or a CD or different things for input and output. They have plugs to put in earphones or a microphone. Those attachments might even be in the keyboard or in the side of the monitor. But this makes it so that you can just imagine, besides the cost, think about the fact if you only had one full computer in a classroom for 25 students, but each one had their own individual place they could sit down and work with a keyboard and monitor. What would that mean as far as upkeep and repair?
T guy's job. It'd be great.
Right. And you wouldn't have all these software configurations and hardware breakdowns, right? So it makes a big difference on a lot of levels, purchasing and then also maintenance. And even just the classroom teacher, oh my goodness, you know, three of the computers are down today, or somebody wiped the hard drive on three of them, so now we can't use them, et cetera, et cetera. Not that that ever happens, right?
Yeah.
That's never happened to you folks.
Mm-hmm.
You never walked into a computer lab and some computer So you always expect the unexpected with technology. So there's a lot of options, and when you're laying out your possibilities, if you're in a situation where you can lay out your possibilities and make choices about hardware, you want to think outside the box, if I can use the pun, and think about what possibilities you could use in order to get the best configuration for your classroom. So if we look at the next slide, let's take a look at a couple of examples of some simulation software that you might use with students. These are some gaming softwares, really, and a particular classification called Sims. How many ever use SimCity? Sim Earth or Sim People?
I see your hands. we got three hands up right now.
Three hands, okay. And how would you describe those games in general?
Jamie, describe.
It takes a lot of creativity.
Okay. What are you doing in it?
Creating a whole new earth or town, city.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And what's happening is, like, in SimCity, you go in, and this has been around for quite some time. I know at least 15 years SimCity started out when it was just on your individual computer. Now you can play it online and play it with a bunch of people from around the world all at once simultaneously, which gives it another dimension. But SimCity, for example, you can go in and create a city, and you get to decide, okay, I want to build three factories in my city because that's going to give me a lot of income because we're producing things. And it's too expensive to be a real green factory and be cost efficient and have all the pollution control. So we're going to do away with that stuff. Well, you know what happens? Pollution starts building up in the river, and the monster starts growing out of the river, right? And pretty soon, the monster takes over and pollutes the city. And so your city gets destroyed. And so students have to make these decisions as they're playing the game as to cost-benefit analysis, basically. And in the process, they learn about ecological situations, zoning, business districts, residential districts, population control, all sorts of different dimensions. SimCity would be along that line, whereas SimEarth is a lot of ecological issues you're dealing with. SimPeople, did anybody ever play that?
Apparently not.
No. That's a weird one. You control the lives of people. You have your own little...
No.
What's that?
We have some parents in the room that are just rubbing their hands together. All right.
Yeah, it gets pretty absurd, and it's a really good teaching lesson for students because you have this, like, you start off with one person, and then you get to decide, okay, am I going to get a real job or not? If I don't, then I don't have any income, so then I can't have a boyfriend or a girlfriend because I can't do anything with them. So I'm going to get a job, and it's only, you know, a decent wage, but if I decide to be a crook, I'll make more money and be able to have flashy things, but I have the possibility of the cops coming in and arresting me at any time. You know, so you have all these choices all the time, and you're running these risks. And if you try to, I mean, there's real absurd things, like if your sim person gets mad because you're frustrating them, the person jumps up and down and waves their arms in the air inside the computer at you and all these things, just like your kids do, you know. But it's a lot of simulation in making choices, trade-offs, cost balance, and the decisions that have to be made in different situations. I've seen students use these games as young as 5 and 6 years old. I've seen them use these games at 40 years old. And probably older, but I wasn't watching. there's a tremendous amount that can be learned and used in educational settings, and the students get very engaged with these. I have one experience that one of my sons is 20 years old now. When he was about 5, we were driving through town, and he said to me, "Mom, is this the business district?" 5 years old. And I'm like, yeah, but how did you know that? He says, "Well, there's more stores here than there are in our neighborhood, so I figured it must be the business district." I'm like, okay, but how'd you know that? He says, "From SimCity." Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the typical sort of tacit knowledge that a 5-year-old has, if, you know, I would expect. So they pick up a tremendous amount and make a lot of decisions as they have the balance of a city, a planet, or people in their very hands in the process. What sort of courses or content areas do you think that these examples of simulations could be used with? If you were going to make a choice about what kind of course you might tie them together with, do you see any connections?
Science.
Yeah.
Sociology.
We've got science, sociology, and social studies so far.
Yeah, there you go. Those are the real obvious ones to me as well. Yeah.
There's one for geography.
What's that?
Geography.
Uh-huh. Very much.
Math.
Yes, very good. A lot of math can be involved in these, yeah. And a really great way them get involved. It's also something that these games aren't over in an hour. I think somebody said complicated or very involved. These are games that take quite a while to play. You save your game, you go back. If you're playing successfully, your game can go on for days, weeks, as your person or city survives. On the other hand, you know, you can make purposeful choices just to see if you can destroy the city quicker, you know, and what's going to be the consequence of your action. And that's the whole what-if scenario as well, which can be instructive. So let's go to the next slide. Here's another one. This is another simulation game called Civilization. Anybody ever hear of this one?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have. It's cool.
What do you know about this one?
I just know that you get to go back into to history and check out what it was like to be one of the kings or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And this has been around a long time. It's very well done. I think it started in like the 1980s. It's been through several versions. I just picked three different simulation games that are kind of among the best ones out there for educational purposes. They're not written as education games. It's described as a turn-based strategy computer game. because it's kind of like one of those books that you make the decision and it takes you to a different ending. In this game, based on your decisions, you end up in a different part of the episode. And in Civilization, you build an empire from the beginning on up. You can be in prehistoric times. You can go to modern times as well. And you have to build on resources from cities. You have to build city improvements, etc., etc. And you can see there from the description that it describes that a player has to have a balance of good infrastructure, resources, diplomatic and trading skills, to just name a few of the things, in order to succeed. I was very curious to see, I'd heard of Civilization, seen it around on the web, read some reviews as I'd done some research at different times. But I was surprised that when one of my college sons was home just a few weeks ago, I looked over and I said, "Oh, Jim, what do you got on the computer?" He says, "Oh, I'm playing Civilization." And he's 22. And he was doing this as recreation. In the midst of all the other possible ones that he could pursue, this was the one that he likes to do. He's a history major. But he just loves to be able to go back in time, make the choices, and see if he can outwit the other military powers, you know, in the process. So, again, I think you have a lot of similar applications here, but it'd be more along the history, technology, and social studies sides of this, urban planning maybe. This is a very advanced connections that are possible with it. It's not early childhood, but the reason I bring it in is that this isn't what we see in the media as computer games, is it? Mm-mm. When we hear about, you know, computer games are bad, computer games are not good for kids, they're talking about the shoot 'em up computer games, and it gives you the idea that computer games are all kind of evil. Now, I have to tell you, in full disclosure, I don't like computer games. I would just as soon be working on an Excel spreadsheet or SPSS. It's odd, you know. But I can see, obviously, that simulation games have a tremendous educational value for developing critical thinking in youngsters and people of all ages. And what a tremendously engaging way to be able to do this. Let's take a look at the next slide. Oh, now something a little bit different. We're into the sciences, Bioblast. Now, let's see, Professor, if you would click the link that says video clip.
Okay.
Let's see if that starts up for you.
No, let me try one more
no.
time.
Is a computer you're on hooked up to the internet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's coming up with a security warning.
Ah.
Apparently I'm not completely free in here. I thought I was. I trust it. Go.
It's from...
This time, try copy and paste in it.
Yeah, I was just going to tell you. Gee, she's advanced, class.
Yeah, they put up with a lot from me.
It's from NASA. I think we can trust it.
Okay, I think so.
This Bioblast, just for something totally different... They say it takes students down on the farm.
Can't get it to come up.
Okay.
Let me go at it a different way. You talk and I'll see if I can get at it a different way.
Okay. You guys can run it later if she can't get it going. She can email you the link. It takes students down on the farm to study biology. because the students use human and plant biology to become space farmers. They have to sustain a crew of six for 3 years on life support that is plant-based. So they call this a problem-based learning, using bioregenerative life support, plant growth, recycling, and understanding the requirements of life. It's a virtual reality interface. And this was developed, I think it's at Wheeler College with a grant from NASA. And it's a very, very good science-based simulation for students, and it's geared for middle school and high school. It's won a lot of awards. So that's BioBlast. And they have a little video clip to give you insight into it. Okay.
I found it. I just
there you go.
I need a plug-in. I'm getting it. I'll show it to them after we get done. I'm downloading it right okay. now.
Good. Okay. See, so you're demonstrating a whole bunch of skills for them. There you go.
And my tech friend just walked in the door, too.
There you go. They are all knowing, those tech friends. They know when you're in need. So that's what you have with that project. What do you think about these aspects of games and the possibility of critical thinking skills and integration into curriculum? What do you students think about this? You think there's possibilities with it?
Definitely.
Yes.
Have you ever done anything like this? You ever seen this used in the classroom?
No.
Okay. It's something really to take a look at.
Yes.
Yeah. And you'll find that on the websites that I list, that you'll find that educators give you further descriptions of each of these, and you'll be able to go to each of the web pages and be able to see more about each of the simulations and how they can be used in education, especially the civilization one. There's a very extensive write-up on it for you. And you can kind of look at it and step back and say, this isn't just a description of civilization game per se, but as an example of how to be able to use a simulation in education. It takes a tremendous amount of money to create these games, and if we can take what a commercial entity creates and then fit it into how we do our curriculum, that's just a tremendous way to do it. Now, if you go to the next slide, you'll see it talks about PFT episodes. And Podcast for Teachers is the podcast that my colleague Mark Gerber and I do weekly. And we have at least four episodes that I found that we talk about using gaming and simulations with education. So if you go to that particular webpage that's listed there, and when you get a copy of the presentation, you just click on that link, and you'll see episodes 77, 72, 64, and 44. You'll hear us talking about gaming and simulations, and you'll also hear descriptions of all sorts of different ones, and we provide the links in our resource list as well. It's one of the things we do with our podcast. It's different than a lot of podcasts. We provide a lot of resource material in our websites. And so you have all the past episodes, and crazy as we are, you have every link we ever talked about listed as well. So going to the next slide, you see that having a strategy for technology integration would include not only thinking about where you want to go with your objectives, thinking about evaluating your hardware and software and what you would want to use, but also thinking about the needs assessment of your students and what's also in place. Planning your instruction and the logistics, you know, what has to happen first, what happens next, and being able to use the resources. I really find that last line really important, because as classroom teachers, we'll find that we'll do this activity this year, and we'll either do it again next semester or next year. And you don't want to do it exactly the same way. You want to improve it every single time. And with technology, things change so rapidly. You have to check out those links and check for updates and look for improvements every time you go to use it. So that evaluation and revision step is so very important. So I really encourage you on that piece. This, getting real close to the end. This is a diagram from one of my books talking about how teachers learn technology. And it's called Keeping Pace with Technology. And thinking about how we actually use it in the curriculum, you can look at a simplest way of using technology in curriculum is to support and supplement it. Then we can also integrate it into that. We really interweave it into our curriculum. And another way is when we really start to reconceive what we're doing with the curriculum and say, can technology take us further places, really turn our classroom around, maybe from teacher-centered to student-centered, really transform what's happening here. And I think that really holds a lot of promise for what technology can accomplish in teaching and learning. It's a real different model of curriculum use of technology, is that transformation piece. Any questions on that?
Go ahead. But I have a comment, if you can hear me.
Sure can.
The only thing that I would encourage everybody to think about, I loved your presentation, is also to have good communication when you get ready to use technology. In my experience, I cannot tell you the number of times that I had gone in to supervise a student teacher in a facility, and they would think everything was up and running, and it wouldn't be at the last minute, and they didn't always have another plan. And also, one time a student teacher was getting ready to do a program, a lesson on math. First thing in the morning, she was all ready. She'd set everything up the night before, ready to go. She got there in the morning. Things were not where she left them. Come to find out, the janitor had come in that evening thinking it was left, you know, took everything apart and spread it across the building because everybody used the equipment. And so you can imagine the student teacher's dilemma when the supervisor was there and she wasn't ready to go. And at the last second, though, one of the special education students who was included in the program was good friends with the custodian, tracked him down, and gathered up all the needed pieces and brought them back to save the student teacher.
Wow.
She just hadn't informed everybody that she was going to do this the next day. And in buildings and schools that share equipment, sometimes that can be a real dilemma.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you're leaving something in place overnight. I was just looking at something for setting up for a conference that we might do this spring. And the people coming in were saying, well, we'd like to set up the night before to be ready for the next morning. And I'm just thinking, not in a university, you don't do that, you know, because there's too many people going to come through and think, oh no, everything's in the wrong place. You know, there's no way in a whole university to get that communicated for sure. And in a building in a school, you might be able to communicate to individuals and get that done. But knowing that is a very important piece. Very good example. Thank you.
I should say I have another guest in here. That was Dr. Sally West, and we're at one of Shawnee College's extension centers. We're in Metropolis, Illinois, and
right.
Sally came to us from Murray State University, where she was student teacher coordinator and I don't know what all, but anyway, she came over here, and we're glad that she's here.
Terrific. Other ideas about stages you've gone through as you've been thinking about using technology in curriculum or as you've been learning it?
Well, in our area, I'll be student teaching next spring, and we run into a lack of equipment in schools and updated technology, like the overheads, and it's kind of like sometimes being in the Stone Ages and, you know, having to use transparencies, and so they're teaching us to use technology, but when we actually go into a school, the technology that we're being exposed to is non-existent. It's like butting your head up against the wall. It's just kind of frustrating.
Yeah, that's a reality of it. Here in New York City, that's not unusual either. One of the things that we like to do with our classes is to teach the teachers how to deal with a one-computer classroom. A lot of the current ed tech books assume that you're going to have students, everybody on one-to-one laptops, or be able to take them frequently to a lab, or you'll have four or five computers. What if you only have one computer occasionally in a classroom? Or how do you use a overhead interactively with a class? You know, how do we accomplish this? And how do you work around your class being able to split up assignments so that if you only can take your class for 1 hour twice a week down to the computer lab, that you can arrange your classroom work so that can work as integrating technology? You think those would be good strategies to be included in your teacher ed?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's challenging for some parts of America and some parts of the tech world to remember that not all of our schools are wired and equipped like the ideal school. But that's reality. The school that you're experiencing is not that unusual. Here in New York City, I've worked in a lot of schools that are in similar situations. Doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it easy. But maybe it just helps to know that you're not alone. I think it really reinforces for us that as teacher educators, we need to have multiple models as to helping our students be able to face the different situations they're in with technology.
I was going to say also we used a PowerPoint and a game, a Jeopardy game that we made in three practicums in a row in a unit for math, and this was last semester, and the school has had brand new laptops and brand new projectors brought to every teacher to use, but they were new, so a lot of the teachers didn't know how to use them either. And the first time that we used it, the children were pretty wild. You know, that they were
good
so
wild.
That they were so excited about the technology they'd never seen before in their class that they didn't interact much with what the lesson was about. The third time we used it, then they were getting the hang of it. So if it's new to all of the teachers in the building and everybody's kind of making a big deal about it, a big fuss about it, then the kids seem to react that way and be a little more intimidated by the technology until they got used to it.
Yeah, so the new tech, when it's that new and that unusual, it can get in the way of learning until it becomes more customary, seems to be what you're saying.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that they're actually excited about learning, though.
Yeah. And there also, you know, there's another real important message there. That school and that school board is interested enough in them as students that they're investing in some new equipment for them and for their learning. And they're excited about their classroom. That might be something very unusual for them, you know? And that's something to be celebrated. So, you know, you can really look at it that way, too. If they haven't seen new equipment for quite a while, then that really is a positive thing. Let's take a look at the next slide, looking at resources. As classroom instructors, there are so many grants that are available, even small ones. You think about $1,000, it might not seem like much, but you can really go a distance today with $1,000. You probably could get two very slim laptops for your classroom for that. And if you look at the most recent issue of the publication we picked up at ISTENET, there's a whole fold-out on grants and funding that I'll email your professor. Has a whole calendar built in there. You can pin up on the wall of all the different grants that you can apply for throughout the next academic year and all the deadlines and things that you can do and grant writing help. I teach a grant writing course here at Fordham that we're going to be offering online. I happen to have gotten about $17 million in funding for the university in the past 7 years from grant writing. I didn't come here as a grant writer. I came as just a professor. But in order to accomplish my research and in order to put equipment into the hands of these schools that had so little, this was the way that I saw I could accomplish it.
You want to move? Yeah.
It's been a wild ride. So
it's an insight. It's nice weather. Or, you know.
You don't have to dig out of the snow too often.
No. In fact, if it snows very much, if like there's snowflakes in the air, the world closes.
Yeah.
It's sounding good.
There you go. And we're the Superman.
So these are all really important pieces to be looking at when you're aligning your resources. Look at research funding opportunities. Look at a lot of companies like Apple, like Toshiba, like Dell. Every year they're dying to give out money to classroom teachers to equip your classrooms. I'm not kidding. I can't get it because I'm a professor. You can get it because you're in classrooms, folks. They want to give you equipment. They want to see you give them lesson plans and have a vision for your classroom, and they'll give you equipment. Does that sound good?
Yeah,
I'd say. All right, so do it. I'll send you that link of that whole chart because it has a lot of great resources there. This seems to be like one of the best-kept secrets among K-12 teachers. And I think you'd make a lot of great points with your school leaders if you started bringing in some funding and equipment that was donated to the school. I don't think any school boards would complain either. Always want to think about, go to the next slide, please, that once you get all that equipment delivered to your school, okay, now just envision that they show up with all this equipment, right? All this software, even if it's one laptop, you remember me, okay, and you want to protect your investment. You don't forget about planning for calamity. Now, does that say don't forget about planning if calamity should happen?
No.
It doesn't say that, does it?
You don't realize I'm sitting here with a desktop and a laptop already hooked up.
There you go. She knows it always happens. There you go. All right, so you've got a professor that preaches this and lives it for you. Okay, you know this one. Rules and procedures, maintenance issues, security, internet firewalls and filters, viruses. One of the things we talk about some on podcasts for teachers, this internet firewalls and filters, is a little frustrating. We need them. They protect the privacy and safety of our students. But sometimes they get a little freaky in that it's hard sometimes for our students and teachers to be able to get to blogs because of the firewalls and filters. So sometimes you have to work with your technology people to be able to articulate and get these things to work together. Some schools, because they've shut so many things off, they've shut off some of the capabilities that have really good instructional usages for us. But what they can do is then open up a specific address for you that is a safe address. And then viruses. Boy, back in the early 1990s when I taught in the tech college, I had to keep warning people about viruses back in the days of the Michelangelo virus. Nobody knew what they were in the general public. Today, anybody who's using any sort of computer equipment is very knowledgeable of it. Go to the next slide, if you would. These are the critical points I want to leave you with my droning on. Equity, ethics, and keeping up with change. These are some slide shots from Bronx, spots in the Bronx. I've worked a lot the last 4 years in the Bronx of New York City, which is a very forgotten area, and we started a whole robotics initiative there, which has totally outgrown the entire university and has brought to fruition some state champion teams. We're very excited about that. But really making technology, understanding and access available regardless of economic ethics, ethnics, and gender situations. This is really important. And there are huge opportunities to teach ethical and legal issues in this. There are legal liabilities with young learners, and we have to help them understand those liabilities and understand what it means to live in a digital age. The last part there is how very important it is for you as you finish your education, you've got to continue your professional development. So you've got to keep up with change, and that's how we have to be invested in you as teachers going forward. So don't leave your education behind, but continue to look for opportunities for your continuing professional development. I'm sure your college is going to have opportunities for that. Podcast for Teachers is a click away in iTunes. You can carry us in your pocket and listen to us wherever you want to take us. But whatever associations you build, that's really important. That's going to be your lifeline, is your professional development as educators. So what questions do you have for me?
While they're thinking, I have one for you. We have a class wiki, and I wanted to get your permission to post your presentation on our wiki.
Sure.
Cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That way you guys have all the links, everything that's in here, too.
Right. We have a couple of recent books that just came out this year. This slide kind of highlights, we have a book on classroom robotics that Mark and I just published this past fall. Some of you that have any interest in that area, it's really project-based learning. And it talks about even robotics and how it's tied to literacy, and robotics tied to science and math and collaborative learning. And then our book that came out in April is Podcasting for Teaching. And that talks about podcasting across all the different literacy areas, ins and outs in podcasting, and all sorts of details on that. And those are all available from Information Age Publishing. That's all on our Podcast for Teachers website.
Our library's got the Podcasting for Teaching ordered. To order the robotics one and put it in our library.
Yeah, they're both really focused on problem and project-based learning, and not even, you know, just strictly the content topic of themselves, but we really look at them that way. So I think they'd be useful. I've been using them with my ed tech classes.
Well, I will share that with the education person, and we're going to have an online intro to ed tech, I think, is going to happen for the first time in the fall, so I'll make sure that Faith gets this also.
Terrific.
Okay, you guys have anything? I think you just blew their minds.
I hope it was interesting and that some good information. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed connecting with you folks.
Thank you.
I'm so excited.
You're welcome.
I've been telling everybody, I've got somebody coming. I've got a guest coming over the computer.
That's great. It sure makes it easy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was cool. And now see all these guys, I told them about Skype and the possibilities for bringing an expert into their classroom, which that's that's really why I asked you to come and talk, is so that I could show them, see, it worked.
So we modeled Skype. They got a lot of good content out of it. They learned all about things they're going to do all weekend, like civilization and sim people and all these things. The parents are going to get to control people for once in their lives, right?
They want to know in the bottom picture, is that you?
No, it's not. No, you see me on kpking.com. There's a big picture of me.
Okay.
kpking.com. Yeah.
Well, I got to go to Nick this time. This is the first time, and these guys got an extra online assignment while I was not here. And your session was at the same time as somebody else's, so Faith went to your session, and I went to the other one. I'm like, oh, I want to go to both. So I just finished listening to your session in the car on my MP3 player.
There you go. I was just going to tell you, we just posted it Monday. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we had a standing room only crowd in there.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
Nick was just amazing. I said the poster that you were talking about, is it somehow I missed it, or maybe I just haven't found it yet?
Yeah, it was in one of the magazines that I was reading. I was just going through it last night. So I'll send you the name of it, and I'll send you a link to it.
Cool,
too.
Thank you. And I will
sure.
Post it on our wiki.
Yep.
Thank you so much for coming today.
I'm very happy to. The flight was easy, and I didn't get any baggage lost or anything, you know?
No.
That's great.
No, what's it called? No
jet lag.
Great mind. Thank you, class.
Thank you.
Okay, signing off.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care.